Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast with your host, the Wolf and Action Jackson, who are keeping rock alive by talking classic rock, hard rock, progressive rock, heavy metal, 80s music, early MTV, UK versus US chart success, and much more. This is the home of classic album and live concert reviews and your place for interviews with artists and legends. You're rocking with the Wolf.
Hey out there, rock and rollers. Welcome to episode number 179 of the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast. Brought to you by me, your host, Mac B. the Wolf, and I will be joined, as usual, by my partner in crime from the East Coast of the USA, Gary Action Jackson. And I say that Jackson is from the East Coast of the USA because we are reviewing an album turning 40 here very shortly. That was a very, very, very big album in the USA in 1984 and 1985. And surprisingly enough to me, in doing research for this show, I found it's extremely popular in many other places around the world. And that's Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA, which has sold upwards of 30 million copies around the world, and millions more singles too. It was released during the time of big albums like Michael Jackson's Thriller and Police Synchronicity and Lionel Richie's Can't Slow Down and Prince's Purple Rain, and just enormous albums could come out, and this one was the rock album of that time. It was the biggest selling album of 1985. And it boasted 7 top 10 singles in America. Of course, Bruce was being hailed by rock critics as the next great singer-songwriter of the American working man, kind of like Bob Dylan and maybe Woody Guthrie before him. Had big success with Born to Run and The River. Had done a solo album in 1982 called Nebraska, which didn't really involve the E Street Band, and he didn't tour on it. But he came back in 1984 with 70 songs ready to put together what would become his biggest selling album of his career. Now, it was all over MTV, it was all over the radio. You couldn't avoid it. But sometimes I tried, not because I didn't like the songs or the videos, but because it was kind of ubiquitous. And, well, my mother liked it. And how cool could it be if your mom really likes it? No matter how cool your mom is, I'm starting to get to that age where I don't want to just like what my mom likes. But we're going to dive into all that, the time, how we came to know it, and all the great songs on it here in just a bit. But first, we have a little bit of business to take care of. As usual, we like to mention that we are proud members of the Pantheon Podcast Network, a family of about 100 different shows, music-related. There really is something in there for everyone. You can check out more at pantheonpodcast.com or follow at pantheonpods. And we are so thankful for our sponsor, RareVinyl.com. Based in the UK, folks, Rare Vinyl buys collections from all over the world, has over a quarter of a million items in stock, and takes great care to send it all over the world, wherever you may be. So if you want to go get that first edition print of Born in the USA, or maybe a tour program, or maybe one of the 7 singles off there, maybe there's a picture disc out there, someone bought like 12 different picture discs from Rare Vinyl the other day, and I thought it was so cool. Didn't even know all the bands, but thought it was great that someone would use the code UGLY to save 10% and buy a whole bunch of picture discs that they always wanted. Because you save 10% with our code UGLY, and you save it on the entire order, not just one item. So you could buy one cool picture disc and save yourself a few bucks, or you could buy hundreds of dollars worth, stuff you've always wanted and been looking for, and save a big fat 10% with the code UGLY instead of a small 10%. But whatever you're looking for, I bet they have it. So go to rarevinyl.com, use that code UGLY, save yourself 10%. It's a big support to our show. Now back to the boss. As we discover here, diving into every single song, Bruce Springsteen is a special songwriter. We try to celebrate that through the show, even though some of these songs we're sick of, or maybe we don't love them, we don't think there's that much to them. It's not the hard rock or the prog rock or the heavy metal or just the big riff rock that we like, but you can't deny the quality of this group of songs. So let's jump into it. We're going to go track by track on Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA as it turns 40, here on The Wolf. The reason I said let's go as early as we can is just because the more I got into this album, the more I realized we were going to need some time. And 12 songs is a lot to go over, especially when seven of them were top 10 singles in the U.S.
Correct.
And I had some reluctance in honestly wanting to listen to the album, to be honest with you.
Why? What's wrong with you? You're not a patriot?
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, that this song that was basically a protest song, singing about how hard, you know, it is for the Vietnam vets coming back and how, you know, they kind of draped themselves in that American patriotism, which got them to Vietnam, which got them screwed up, you know, mentally and physically. And and still we see a lot of this rampant. I mean, here's the thing. It was the Reagan era. It's a very conservative time. But I don't think Bruce kind of ever envisioned it getting to the way it is today.
No, I think it was exactly the opposite. I think that all those people like Ronald Reagan, like, did you ever actually listen to this? Do you understand what he's trying to say? It's like the people who play Every Breath You Take at their wedding.
Right?
What?
It's about spying on you. You know?
Correct. Yeah, this song is about people coming back from Vietnam and basically getting kicked in the dick. Mm-hmm. Over and over and over again. Like they sacrificed for their country and got nothing in return. Cool. Thanks. Yes.
By the America that they, you know, they wanted to defend and wanted to be a part of so fervently. And Correct. It basically got them screwed over in more ways than one. And yet there's still people who are that way who are now shitting on them, you know, basically.
But he does a very good job on this record. In fact, a fantastic job of taking bummer themes and wrapping them in a very upbeat package. So you're tapping your toe until you maybe listen number three or four where you say, hey, wait a minute, what is he really talking about here? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's what I think it was. I don't
exactly
think
right.
Means
yeah.
What you think it means.
That's what you keep saying. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Yeah. Hey, Ronald, I don't think that song means what you think it means. Yeah, I know what he's saying, but that's just the chorus.
And it's great. It's a great chorus. And more than one song in this album had been used by politicians to run for president, as it turns out. So, yeah. So let's go back in time, right? Born in the USA. It's the seventh studio album by Bruce Springsteen. So he had a pretty good run, right? He'd done well in the 70s. He's kind of billed as the new Bob Dylan, as far as he's the songwriter for the American working man, can take a few lines and really tell a story, not unlike Woody Guthrie from even further back, you know, back in like the Dust Bowl of the 30s or whatever, like taking the plight of the average person, making them poetic. I mean, even, you know, something like the factory getting closed or going down to the county line to find work, but then, you know, try to tell girls you own one of the World Trade Center towers, you know, or whatever, you know, just little stuff like that, you know, going into a bar and seeing an old buddy. And then you go straight in to talk about, remember that time in high school when we jumped the truck over the bale, you know, whatever it was, just taking very real stories, but making it into very melodic and even sometimes danceable pop songs, you know, with rock and roll as your background. And he does a little country in here, you know, you can kind of feel a little bit of that. You can feel songs that could be good R&B songs in here. But there's something like 70 songs, Jackson, that he had laying around and then created for this to select for Born in the USA. 70.
And I don't even know where you would start on that. I mean, I guess you would have a kind of a theme and then pick from there. And then you'd have to cull through the stuff that maybe is, a lot of the stuff probably sounds the same or similar. Okay, get rid of that. And then what are the ones that are going to go together to make a cohesive record?
Right.
But I guess there was, and we'll get into this, a little later, there was one song that apparently they needed extra, and it was like, are you kidding me? I've got all of this music and you're telling me I need something
another
extra.
Song? Yeah. You're kidding me. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What am I, a trained monkey? Like, you just tell me more and I'm like, okay, let me just go crank something else out.
And yet, somehow, yeah, in a night, he did it. So you can't deny the talent of Bruce Springsteen as a songwriter and a storyteller and being able to take all that and make it into not just songs, but modern, listenable songs. Mm-hmm. It's kind of amazing. You say 70 songs, how is that even possible? But then when you get all and through all these, there's no clunkers on this. Some are different styles, but they're not like, okay, well, that song's just horrible. I might not like it, but mm-hmm. that doesn't mean it doesn't have merit as a decent song.
Right. And the other, I've never really listened to Nebraska because it's apparently pretty rough.
It's a downer. He was in a bad headspace then.
Yeah. It's a lot of acoustic stuff, but the fact that this was what he was working on while that was going on is incredible too. It's a total 180 around Nebraska, 1982.
Yeah, it came out right before this. Yeah, and technically, see, that was a Bruce Springsteen album, whereas The River, which came out in 1980, mm-hmm. was a Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band album. This one is, like Born in the USA is.
I mean, I guess. They're all really just Bruce Springsteen records.
Well, yeah, just like there's Tom Petty, and then there's Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers records.
Right.
You know, I guess Nebraska was one he felt he needed to do on himself, for himself, and with and by himself, just put his name on it. Didn't get as much input from the band. Didn't tour it, I don't think. And so there were electric sessions, I guess, for Nebraska, where some of these songs came from.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, Power Station in New York, from April 26th to the 14th, they laid down Born in the USA, Downbound Train, Working on the Highway, I'm on Fire, Glory Days, Darlington County, and I'm Going Down. Whereas, like, Cover Me was recorded at the Hit Factory back in 1982, and then, like, the others were kind of at random spots through 1983, including Dance in the Dark. That was 1984. It was, like, the last one. But we'll get into that.
But wait a minute, though, because you had mentioned in a previous conversation that this record was not one that you were attracted to during that time period.
I mean, it was and it wasn't.
Uh-huh.
I liked some of the songs on it, no doubt about it. Born in the USA, the title song just seemed like, even at like 11, I felt like that was over patriotism. That was, you know, like I love the Born in USA, and like the 1984 Olympics were in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and the Russians and all their little satellite buddies didn't come, so we crushed the Olympics. And it was the first Olympics I'd ever seen, right? Because when we were 7 in 1980, the USA didn't go, and I wasn't really even aware of it. You know, I even missed the Winter Olympics where the hockey team won. Because the only reason I knew anything about it was because I bought Pop-Tarts and they would have like Olympic stickers in the Pop-Tarts. Like, that's it. That's all I knew about the Olympics, you know. So 84 was huge for me, and then we clobbered everything and it was amazing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the video, I'm like, does he really perform like that all the time? It seemed like he was performing for the video. And I guess there's nothing wrong with that. There's just something about it that seemed over the top to me as far as his performance, but I think that is actually kind of the way he performs.
Very intense, yes.
You know, yeah. I mean, I've seen him a few times, but he was much older at that point. Mm-hmm. Hell of a show, 3 hours. He's in great shape. They do big tracks, deep tracks, all that kind of stuff. They're an amazing band live, and they still are by all accounts. They're still doing it. They just wrapped like a 70-date international tour, and now they're in the USA, you know. So, yeah. And what I think I mentioned before to you was, my mom was really into mm-hmm. it.
There
right?
we go. Yeah.
And all the moms were kind of into it. And I'm pretty sure my mom went to see him on that tour, too. Mm. And a lot of people did. It was a big tour that went on a long time. And I love my mom and everything. But it was like, if your mom's into it, how cool could it be?
Right, right. And he was older at this point in time. He was probably, what, in his 30s?
He had to have been. I mean, this is his seventh album, you know, and... Well, let's just take a quick look. Born September 23rd, 1949. Yeah, so he turns 35 the year this comes out.
Right. So I think for me at this point in time, yeah, it was everywhere. And I did kind of think of him as this, like, oh, he's like from the 70s. Like, he's not new and happening right now. And unfortunately for him, he was from the wrong country for me.
Because he's from New Jersey.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's just, I mean, he wasn't English. He was the, you know, and I was, you know, how old were we when this came out?
11.
11, yeah. I mean, I didn't know anything about the working man or, you know, having my heart kicked around or losing job or anything like that. So I'm like, well, that stinks and I'm sorry, but I can't relate to you, Bruce Springsteen.
I would listen to the Police, man.
Correct, yes.
They're talking about spying on girls, but it sounds nice, so,
I'm like, talking about synchronicity, whatever that is.
Whatever that is, sounds great. I love it. You know, I love the idea of being wrapped around my finger. Yeah, sure. Okay. You know, Men at Work are still on the radio from last year. Let's just focus on them.
Correct. But you're right. I think it was something that the definitely older people liked. And so it was just kind of like, well, that can't be cool.
Well, exactly. You know, and I remember my mom saying that one of her girlfriends for her birthday, her husband gave her all the Bruce Springsteen tapes. I'm like,
okay.
Well, what does that mean? I mean, is this the only one he's had? Because as far as I know, he was not on MTV for Nebraska, right? So I had no idea he exists. So as far as I knew, every time a new album comes on, I'm like, this is their first album. As soon as it comes on MTV, I'm like, this is the first one ever, you know? So I had no idea. It's like, no, he's got like a bunch of them. So I'm like, oh, and she like showed them to me. Like, what's The River? You know? What's Darkness? You know, I don't know what any of these are, you know? So I'm like, oh, okay. He's been around for a while. I get it. And they kept putting out songs is the other thing. I mean, this thing didn't go away for so long.
Yeah. Dancing in the Dark came out May 9th, 1984. And My Hometown was November 21st, 1985.
It's a year and a half.
Yeah.
That's an incredibly long time for one album. Most people would have put out an album in May of 84 and another album in November of 85. Plus, Thriller is kind of still having its run. I mean, Thriller was the number one selling album in 83 and 84. Born in the USA was the number one selling album of 1985. And it was kind of part of this pattern, I feel like, at the time of like super albums. Like with 1982 being the aberration where there weren't a lot of record sales, 83, 84, 85, 86, 87 were huge. You could sell 20 million copies of a record. You could sell 20 million of copies of a record and not even be number one like Lionel Richie was with Can't Slow Down to Michael Jackson's, right? Like, or Purple Rain, you know, it's like you could have huge, huge albums in these days. And I don't know if this was just a reaction to like, hey, all those other guys are R&B and this is a rock guy and we want to be behind our rock guy. But it wasn't just the USA. I mean, 17 million in the USA, that's amazing. But the 30 million means that there's a hell of a lot of sales from all around the world, you know? And that always shocked me because I figured the Born in the USA thing would turn a lot of people off who aren't Americans.
Right, know? Right. But I mean, looking at the tour, it clearly that was not the case because he went all over the world. So maybe it was the opposite. Maybe people were buying into the USA thing. And, you know, I think the other thing, too, is even if you're not from the USA, if you can plug into Springsteen's, I mean, there's working people everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
Who have these issues that he's talking about. So, yeah, I would have loved to have seen him in Kyoto, Japan, screaming Born in the USA and have,
Right, yeah.
I mean, Australia, that's cool. But, yeah, he went everywhere.
He did. In Australia, he sold a million copies, 14 times platinum. Now, at the time, there's like, are there 25 million people in Australia? I don't know if there are, right? So that's like 1 in 25 people in Australia have this album, you know? I mean,
yeah.
You know, 17 times platinum in New Zealand. That's only a quarter of a million. You know, it's not as many as he sold in New York City, but still, I mean, it's a small place, you know, and double platinum in Germany and triple platinum in Switzerland, you know, triple platinum in the UK. To me, that's just so shocking because that whole, even though they probably would understand the lyrics if they listened, and there's a lot of working people in the UK around this time, through the time of Thatcher, that were really starting to feel left out, left behind. Still, that core is Born in the USA. It'd probably be like, okay, screw you, Yankees, you know. I don't want to hear that, you know, and I wouldn't blame them. But so it was always just surprising to me.
Yeah, that how big it was.
Yeah, outside of the USA, you know. Anyway, he is a great songwriter. It's a pretty good singer. He's a fantastic performer. I always felt like he was a little overrated by like the Rolling Stones of the world, who basically propped him up so that he really could never do anything wrong. Like any album he put out, it was 5 stars. It was fantastic. the latest from the greatest, you know.
And if you don't get it, you're just a jerk.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I'm like, all right, you know, look, some of this is good. Some of it, you know, not everything from him is just a jewel from God. You know, he's just a dude from New Jersey, you know. I mean,
well, and I know I talk to some people and they can't stand his voice. So like, he can't really sing. You're right. But he can sing his songs. He can sing
just like Bob Dylan. Just
correct.
Like Bob Dylan. Right.
Right.
Can't
right.
sing, but when he's telling his stories, it's like there's something about it, like this yeah. this noise, this voice talking about, you know, this hard stuff sometimes.
And a lot of his stuff is, I think, very personal, and so somebody else really can't sing it because I wrote this for myself.
Exactly, you know. But he's on top of the world, so he's all over MTV.
Mm-hmm.
He starts dating this model turn actress, Julianne Phillips.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They get married, I guess, after the tour's over, because he met her, I think, at one of the video shoots. So it's this guy couldn't be any bigger, right? Impossible for him to be any bigger. And you would think, well, is there going to be a crash? Because he takes such good care of himself. Like he brings a gym with him on the road so that, yeah. you know, he can work out and stay in shape and do those 3-hour shows running around, singing, playing the hell out of his guitar. Mm-hmm. I feel like his guitars get beat up like Malcolm Young's used to. He's like, he's hitting those things hard.
If you saw it up close, you'd think, did you run this thing over with a car? No, I've just been playing it for 50 years.
Yeah, yeah. So he's got a lot of charisma. He's got a lot going for him. But, I mean, sometimes when you have all that going for you, you know, that's when I start to push back, like, okay, that's enough out of you. Because at some point, it's manufactured. Even if it's not manufactured by him, it's by the press, it's by the public, it's by the record company, it's by MTV, whatever. At some point, it's like, okay, that's enough of you. And that's kind of, that's why I didn't want to listen to it. And honestly, 3 or 4 songs on it, I didn't listen to even for this show because I don't
dare you.
Need to because they're stuck in there.
Ah, I see. Well, it's one of those ones where you could, I mean, you maybe could have done a show on this without listening to it at all because...
I tried.
Yeah.
I tried. I couldn't do it. I mean, you know, there's the deeper tracks, the stuff that right. I wanted to hear, you know, that you just had to. But I mean, I go on Spotify, play Born in the USA, skip the song too because I don't even want to hear it. It just brings back so much vitriol for me. I don't want to hear it.
All right.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's rock and roll comedian Don Jameson, and you are listening to the great, the fantastic podcast, The Ugly American Werewolf in London.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So I guess that's where we start is the first song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Born in the USA title
mm-hmm.
track.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What did you think about this back in the day?
I thought it was way overplayed. Mm-hmm. Again, I knew what it was about. There we go. Because I mean, I could listen to the lyrics and, you know, you're talking about a guy being in Vietnam and coming back and having, you know, trying to work at a crappy job that they won't give him and just getting screwed over, and then you have this chorus, and yeah, really wondering as a kid, like, this seems like it's way overplayed, and I don't think people are really understanding what he's saying. For a long time I didn't like the intro drum beat, like that one just steady beat, bang,
yeah,
bang, but it actually works. It works in this because the entire track is just for him to sing over.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bed.
And kind of a shout over, to be honest with you.
Well,
right?
Yeah. There you go. Yes. Yeah. And I know this was the opener at maybe not every show, but probably every show on this tour. And you talk about getting people going.
Oh, yeah.
Right off the bat.
Absolutely. Fist in the air. Yeah, dog. Correct. USA. Ever been anywhere else? No, because we're the greatest.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that's I think, why I don't like it, because it gives people this false pride. And it's not even what that's intended for. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a Neil Young song. It's kind of like Rockin' in the Free World. Like, you take the chorus, keep on rocking in the free. Like, yeah, I love, I'm rocking in the free world. I love it. But then you're talking about a girl putting her baby down in a garbage can so she could take a hit. And that's what America is.
Yeah.
But you don't worry about that. You just keep on rocking in the free world. You know, that's what this song is kind of like to me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. 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 The more that you listen to it, the more that you get the fact that he's talking about something else. But this could have been very differently. If this had been an acoustic deal, if this had been more of a downer tune to match what he's trying to say, it would not have come across like that. He could have really made the point with the music, and this would have gone very differently.
But I mean, I think he does make the point about it. I mean, I think the way he does it is smart in that it's not a downer song. Yes, he's talking about terrible stuff, but it becomes a fist pumping anthem about it. Yeah. You know, it's like, because all this born in the USA stuff is what gets people screwed over more than it, you know, keeps them whole, you know, kind of thing. And if that's all you've got to cling to, then you don't really have anything.
Right. Right. And if you, yes. And if you blindly serve this idea, it's going to bite you in the ass later.
Of course, it's a huge hit. Number 9 on Billboard and number 8 on mainstream rock, went to number 5 in the UK. Shocking to me. Would you, if I told you that Born in the USA went higher on the charts in the UK than it did in the US, would you believe me?
No, I would not.
Of course not.
It's usually the other way around. And again, why would they key into Born in the USA?
Unless they really did understand the lyrics. I mean, a lot better than the Hoopleheads here did. I don't know. But the single alone, even though it only, quote unquote, went to number 9, the single alone went triple platinum in the US, which is, and I think it went gold and platinum other places. So just that song alone, triple platinum, that's amazing. But it was not like it was the first single.
No, which I would have lost that bet also.
Absolutely, I would have lost that bet. It was third.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, the album comes out in June of 84. People are going to, and the album's called Born in the USA. It's the first track on there. So people are hearing the track who buy the record, who heard the other singles, bought the record. The Olympics are going on. There's all sorts of nationalism going on that summer. So people are hearing it. Ronald Reagan is using it to bolster his campaign.
America's future rests in 1,000 dreams inside your hearts. It rests in the message of hope in songs of a man so many young Americans admire, New Jersey's own Bruce Springsteen.
Until Bruce said, cut that out. It's not for you. But yeah, it wasn't released until October 30th, 1984, which is a few days before the election. So it wasn't like it was released in the summer and then everybody listened to it all. I mean, the album was, but the song wasn't released as a single until later.
Mm-hmm.
So the third of seven singles, Jackson, that all hit the top 10 in the US. A record.
Which is how you sell 17 million copies.
Yeah, obviously. All right, so that's the big anthem.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't want to hear it. Honestly, if it comes on the radio, I change the channel.
Yeah, I would say the same thing, too. Like, you know, it brings back memories, but yeah, I don't need to hear that ever again.
Not super fond ones, you know. And I have the cassette. I think I kind of conned my mom into getting it. Like, you want it, Mom, right? You want it. So we'll keep it in your car. And then when she got sick of it, then it found its way into my tape collection, right? So I still have it, but I don't have a cassette player, so I guess I can't play.
So you can just admire it.
Yes. Well, we got to talk a little bit about the cover, right?
All right.
Iconic.
Mm-hmm.
In front of the stripes of the American flag, his butt with a ball cap. I mean, is this his most iconic cover? I think it probably is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's one of the most iconic covers of the 80s, too, I would say. I mean, it's one of those, even if you had no writing on it, people would know what it was.
Yeah. Annie Leibovitz did the cover. She's done a lot of great rock shots and just, you know, shots in general over the years, formerly of Rolling Stone. But yeah, it's,
you know, and if you're looking at it now, like he's selling the image too. You know, the jeans are old and beat up. He's got a white t-shirt on. The baseball cap looks like it's beat to hell. This looks like a dude who could work at a manual labor job, no problem.
Factory, you know, married his high school sweetheart, you know.
Has a couple of kids now, you know.
Trying to make his truck payments, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know. Yep, even though at this point, that's not who he is, not even close, really.
No.
Right?
No. Yeah, because I knew Born to Run was big, but I didn't realize how big the river was. Mm-hmm. So yeah, at this point in time, yeah, he's not working. Well, geez, I wonder where that next payment's coming from. No,
got nothing to do with it anymore. All right, second song, moving forward, because there's 12 songs on here.
Ooh.
And yet it's still barely like 47 minutes. So the songs are shorter compared to like the hard rock and the prog songs that we've gotten into in the last 25 years. He doesn't have 6 and 7 minute songs on here. He's got like 3 to 3.5 minute songs on here. And I think that's one of the blessings in going back and listening to this is you don't have to sit through this thing that won't end. All of them are pretty short.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of jams in there. There's really no solos. It's pretty tight. And I know that they'll play them. They'll extend out, and the musicianship is fantastic.
Yeah,
there isn't any kind of like 7 minute with a 7 minute or a 2 minute breakdown in the middle. No, these are compact songs.
Yeah, and he's got the classic E Street lineup: Max Weinberg on the drums, Gary Talon on the bass, Roy Bittan on the piano, Clarence Clemens on the sax, little Steven Van Zandt is playing guitar, Danny Federici does some of the organ.
For the record,
huh?
For the record, he plays the guitar. Yes.
Yes. Yes. For the record, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen him play with all those guys. They kind of kept it together for a long time. Although Steven was leaving the band at this time, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Nils Lofgren was kind of starting to come in to fill in for him. And they're both in videos for the record, which is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely an interesting relationship the two of them have. But we'll move on to that later.
We'll get to that. The second song is Cover Me.
Uh-huh.
Which, of course, was a single, because more than half the record is singles.
Yeah.
And I did not know that he originally wrote it for Donna Summer. But John Lando thought, you know what, this is, who produced the album with him, said, you know, you should keep this one. It's good. Why don't you give Donna something else? So he did, and he kept it. He's like, okay, well, I don't really know. And as he wrote it for Donna, it may not have been a good fit for him. But he reworked it and, did very well with it, obviously.
Yeah, and this was not the first time that he had done that. Apparently, I want to say it was Hungry Heart.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote that for the Ramones, or was going to give it to the Ramones. And I think Landau was like, "What? Stop. What are you doing? This is a good song. Don't give this away." So, and this is interesting, too, because I didn't know that he wrote it for somebody else, and certainly not Donna Summer. But this doesn't really sound like any of the rest of the songs on here. Like, it's just like anybody could sing this. It's not. It's just a, I don't know what the term I'm looking for is. There's no real message in here. It's just kind of it rocks a little harder. It could be done by somebody else, where Born in the USA, probably not. Now, promise me, baby, you won't let them find us. Hold me in your arms, let's let out the blindness. Cover me.
Yeah, I have kind of the same notes. You're like, this could have been done by someone else. The first one could not have.
Mm-hmm.
But it could have been an R&B song, you know.
Right.
And Donna was kind of transitioning. She did she Works Hard for the Money song, and that was a big hit. But like when disco was over, it's kind of like Donna Summer who? Like Donna go away. It's like, no, I'm not just disco. It's just I took advantage of that wave, and I want to keep going. It was back with Jersey Girl. Mm-hmm. Live, it went to number 7 on the Billboard chart. It went to 2 on mainstream rock, so it actually did pretty well on the rock side. 16 in the UK, and it was gold. It sold at the gold level. So we've already got 3.5-4 million in sales from the first two songs, singles. By the way, the B-side on Born in the USA was Shut Out the Light.
Okay.
But we can't include all the B-sides here,
we'll
tracks at least.
Yeah,
it would take too damn long. It was the second single released in July of 1984, which is right around the Olympic time. So I'm a little surprised they didn't put out Born in the USA at that point. But whatever, they've got their reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's move along to Darlington County. This sounds like a Springsteen song.
Right.
When you grew up, it was more about what town you were from than what county, right?
That's where I was from, yes.
Yeah.
Not in New Jersey, though.
Right. Well, and where I was from, it's what city are you from?
Okay.
Because there's a bunch of nothingness between cities back then. And then maybe it's which part of the city, which hamlet, which gets its own little name, but it's still basically the city of Louisville. Mm-hmm. Right? Is the same. But like talking about a county, I'm like, why are you talking about a county? Do you not have a city around? You know, you don't have it. And the answer is no, not everybody does have a city in their county. So your county, there's a lot of pride in the county you come from. Mm-hmm. Although sometimes I wonder why, if there's nothing there and it's something you want to get out of. But this is basically a song about two guys looking for work on the county line, right?
Yeah. Two guys who live in New York are sick of it. There's a change. Somebody's got it. I know somebody who can give us a job somewhere else. Let's just get the hell out of here and start over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I always love this song because we're changing gears here. This is now kind of more of a country rocker. And just the whole thing about how, you know, we got, what's he talking about? We've got the music blasting out of the T-tops. We're out of here. We're going to go someplace different. We're going to meet some girls who are into us.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so you're right. A little bit country with some organ and a lot of piano.
Yeah.
Clarence has a big sax solo in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an old story about a couple guys. They just kind of split and they, you know, want to go work their BS rap on some chicks in a different place. You know, like,
right.
Okay, we're striking out in New York.
Yeah.
Let's go someplace else.
Hey, my cousin lives down somewhere. Yeah, let's go. Yeah. And this is where he's got some great lines in this one. You know, telling the girls or, you know, we're from New York City where the girls are pretty, but they just want to know your name. Like, yeah, you know. No thanks.
And I think there's something in there like we each own one of the Twin
Towers. Yeah, exactly. Like that,
you know?
If no one knows you, then yeah, you can just develop this BS. Oh, yeah. You know, you've got out of state plates. These guys are from somewhere else. That's right, baby. Got two big spenders here.
It was easy to do before the internet came along.
World Trade Center. I don't think so. Type.
Yeah, because my buddy Jason, I guess, who stayed with us for a while freshman year, it would be fun sometimes for us to go out and be like, oh, yeah, Jason played for the Washington Redskins. And, he, you know, from 19, you know, 19 whatever to whatever. And people are like, oh, wow, that's really cool. And now it's like, do you want to do that? I'm like, all they're going to do is pull out their phones and say,
right,
this isn't who you say. It's like, this, there's no point in that anymore, you know. But this song is like, there's not a lot to it, to be honest with you. I mean, there's a lot of sha-la-la going on in there. There's not a... It's a story about two guys saying, screw the big city, let's go make a new life for ourselves. Old story, kind of a country song.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's a throwaway tune, but the message is just kind of light, you know, just two dudes fooling around, basically.
But the next one,
mm-hmm.
Working on the Highway,
yeah,
you know, I always liked this one.
Why?
Listening to this back in the day, it just had a good rhythm to it, you know?
It has a very 50s, like, rockabilly, you know, because he sings, and then it goes, and then he goes back to, that's very 50s reminiscent.
It's exactly what I have here, almost a rockabilly song, right? You know, and it's still got that Springsteen, like, you know, Woody Guthrie thing, like, you're working on the highway, but then you get in trouble because maybe you took your eyes towards a girl who was too young for you, something.
Maybe.
So you go to prison, and then you're working on the highway again. It's just you're not making money at it, you know? And so as a free man, and then again as a convict, because I guess the working title of the acoustic demo was called Child Bride.
Yeah, I'm glad we changed that.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Thank
you.
Yeah, Jerry Lee Lewis.
Exactly, you know? So again, yeah, it's like, oh, you just hear the song and you hear the chorus, working on a highway. I'm like, oh yeah, this is a working man song. This is a fun song. And then you really listen closely, like, are you talking about going after an underage girl? You know, like, yeah, suddenly this song is really not that cool anymore. You know?
Yeah. And you know, the more I think about it, you know, does it have that Johnny Cash feel to it where it's like, hey, things were going great and now they're not. Now I've kind of screwed myself. I'm in prison.
Exactly.
In my head, I keep a picture of a pretty little miss. Signed by Mr. I'm gonna lead a better life than this. Pushing on the highway late and down the blacktop. Getting on the highway all day long, I don't stop. Getting on the highway blasting through the bedrock. Getting on the highway working on the highway.
And it's interesting, they didn't do this for a long time, but then when they do bring it back, they play it with Darlington County. It's like, that's a twofer.
Yeah, yeah. And those two would go together very nicely. And, you know, just as you would have heard it on the album.
Yeah. So all these songs, of course, some of them are huge hits that he has to work into either every tour or every other tour.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them he brings back after a while. This next one, Downbound Train, mm-hmm. this is the one that I totally forgot about. You know, like, there's always one song on the album that you have no recollection of for whatever reason. Or you're like, oh, yeah, that's the one. What did you think about Downbound Train? Give it a listen this time around.
I love this song. I love it because it's got that really cool riff. And then the bass comes in and then it's just Bruce Springsteen telling you about how life was cool and now it's not. I'm just getting kicked in the face again and again and again.
Yeah, I think this is a really good song.
Yeah.
And it's not very long. In doing research, one person said this is the saddest song that Bruce ever wrote. And another person said this is the best song on this album.
It could be. It really could be. I'm glad this was never a single. And this is, we've said this a million times, but this is why we do this, to find a song like this where you're like, hey, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you heard it, but you don't remember it. You're rediscovering it again. And this is what he's really good at, is having these lyrics that maybe you don't hear the first time, but you know, now I work down at the car wash where all it ever does is rain. And it's just like,
it's one of those things when everything's against you, you know.
Yeah.
Got laid up from the lumber yard, then times got hard, you know, then my lady said, you know what, I'll see you later, pal. You know, you're young, you fall in love, you get a job, you think, okay, hey, I'm off and running. And then things don't go right, and you lose your job, you lose your lady.
It just keeps getting worse. It just keeps things domino. You know, she says, we had it once, we ain't got it no more, where she's walking out the door, and it's like, no, I got nothing. This sucks.
This is a blues song, but it's not a blues tune.
But again, you've given me this bummer material in a hell of a catchy tune.
I had a job, I had a girl, had something going, mister, in this world. I got laid off down at the lumber yard. Our love went bad, times got hard. Now I work down at the car wash, where all it ever does is rain. Don't you feel like you're a rider on a dime?
Yeah. Really good song, Bruce. Yeah. I'm pretty impressed with it, to be honest with you. And an album with 7 top 10 singles, something like this is going to get lost, you know? Yeah. And I like this one. I don't have any interest in really seeing him again, especially with the prices that I see people paying
these days.
I need both of my kidneys. Yeah,
so.
Exactly. But I'd see him play this song would be cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. And then we wrap up side two with I'm on Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know why. I always kind of felt like this must be an older song that he didn't write. He must be covering somebody on this. I don't know why I felt like that, but that's just what it seemed like to me.
It doesn't sound like anything else on the record. And so I could see where you would say that. And it doesn't really even sound like, I even remember this when it came out, like thinking to myself, that doesn't sound like Bruce Springsteen. Like this sounds, mm-hmm. it's gotta be somebody else, but no, that's him. He definitely wrote it, but yeah, it could have been an older one that was or at least the idea that was hanging around for a while.
But no, it's all original, you know, and mm-hmm. he did it, and it was the fourth single that was released in February of 85 and was backed with Johnny Bye Bye, which Chuck Berry gets a co-write on. But look, another one, it went to 6 on the Billboard chart. It went to 6 on the Adult Contemporary chart mm-hmm. because it is a kind of a mellow song. Went to 5 in the UK. It did better in the UK than it did in America. And it went double platinum sales in America. That's unbelievable.
This one's short too, isn't it?
Yeah, though this is a short song. There's not a lot to it. And like you say, I mean, it doesn't have solos and stuff in it. They don't kind of squeeze that stuff in here. Yeah, it's not even 3 minutes. It's the shortest song on the album.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, you write a 2.5 minute song and sell 2 million copies of it. That's pretty
good
deal.
That. Yeah, I'm okay with that. And I know there was a video for this one. And so I went back and watched, and he's working at a garage at the beginning. And I have a note, you know, he pulls out from under the car in basically what he wears on stage. And I said, I have no problem believing Bruce works in a garage. He just has that. Like for all the money that he's made, for all the success that he's had, even today, mm-hmm. If you didn't know who he was and you saw him on the street, you'd think he was a blue collar dude. Like he's never gotten into the, you know,
fashion thing or
correct. Yeah. So
not that he doesn't have really nice, cool clothes. It looks like
he's
a working class guy. Right. It was a very expensive working class clothes. Yeah. But no, I mean, and it's kind of the story of, look, some high roller lady comes in with this flashy T-Bird, probably brings it in more often than she needs to.
Right.
Dangling the keys.
Always ask for the same guy.
Yeah, exactly. Always ask for Bruce, dangling the keys that has more than just the car keys on. It's like, well, I just bring it to the house when you're done kind of mm-hmm. thing. And of course he does bring it to the house, but he sticks the keys in the mailbox because Bruce is a good guy.
Correct. Correct.
And the staccato guitar on here is good.
Yeah.
It's really a good song. But when he's talking about, hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all alone? He's talking about like a young woman who's like a kept woman, you know, and, you know, does he treat you right? Because I'll treat you better kind of thing.
Yeah.
Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all alone? I got a bad desire. Oh, I'm on fire. Tell me now, baby, is it good to you? And can he do to you the things that I do? Oh, no. I can take you high.
But when I heard this as a kid, hey, little girl, is your daddy home? I'm like, is this another underage girl thing? You know, it's like, because if he's not, I'm going to sneak in to do dirty things to you, which is okay if you're another kid. Like if you're a teenager doing stuff to a teenage girl, that's fine. But if you're like Gene Simmons, like, hey, little girl, is your daddy home? It's like, then it takes on a different meaning and it would not be okay.
And that's
but overall, I think the lyrics are good.
Yeah, no, they are. And I'm glad that he did that video because it puts it in more of a context of, like you said, this is more about a guy who
is your sugar daddy home.
Correct. Kind of he's pining for a woman who's, you know, is she opening the door? You know, what's mm-hmm. going on here? And yeah, so that makes it a lot more palatable. Yeah, I don't want to think about somebody like, you know, you're 15 or something, and that, you know, is your actual father home? Yeah, thank you.
That's a problem. Yeah, but the way that they record it, it sounds like a train running. That it's a really good song. I mean,
yeah.
I don't love it, but you can't deny that it's a good song.
So. Okay, so that's something you need to talk about too. Is Bruce gets a lot of credit for being this, like, he's writing poems and putting them to music, but the music he comes up with is catchy as hell.
Yep.
Unlike a certain Mr. Lou Reed, where, I mean, he's got pretty intense lyrics, but the music is it's just hard to listen to.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So he does it with pop sensibilities. Bruce does,
correct.
You know, and you know, collaborate with someone like Patti Smith. Her songs aren't always great melodic, but then they can do each other's songs pretty well.
And I understand, as a disclaimer, if I don't like Lou Reed, then I don't know anything about music and I should just drive off a cliff. However, I know what I like and that's not it.
And that's not it. And it never has been and it never will be. Go back to The Village.
Right.
Sit in a circle on the floor and talk about how important everything you think is compared to people in the Midwest.
Hey, this is Mark from Performance Anxiety, and you're listening to The Ugly American Werewolf in London.
All right, that is the end of side one.
Okay.
So on any album side two, it might have a big hit, you know, possibly two, but it's pretty, this has got to be the rarest thing in the whole world.
If you just had six songs, if this was an EP, it would have sold 12 million copies.
Yeah, exactly. The last three songs are all top 10 hits. And then the one before it, I'm Going Down, still got into the Billboard without being released as an official single, you know? So it's, this has got to be the best second side of a record, most successful ever. Seriously, ever. Every song but one got into the top 30 on Billboard, even though two of them weren't even released as singles. It's bizarre. Okay, we're going to start with No Surrender.
Okay.
I kind of forgot about this one, but I remembered it better than I did Down Bound Train.
Okay.
And apparently he likes it. They played the hell out of it over the last year. All those 70 international dates, they played it like every night, basically.
Okay. I can see why.
They brought it back.
Yeah, it's more of an upbeat rocker tune. It's an anthem. You know, it's one of those, you know, No Surrender, No Defeat, No Surrender, or No Retreat, No Surrender. It's got a very Born to Run vibe to it. Not really a big message in there other than that.
Yeah, and apparently on the Born in the USA tour, he played it acoustically with a harmonica a lot on the tour. But then he kind of did it less and less and less. But he must like it because they played it a lot, you know, recently. And Little Steven, I feel like, basically forced him to put on the record. Steve Van Zandt did. It's like, because when you're picking songs, like, you got to put this on there. You've got to.
We learned more from a three-minute record day than we ever learned in school. Tonight.
Okay, and that's something that I didn't know before I started into this, is that, I mean, I knew Steven Van Zandt was in the band, I knew he was out, I knew they'd known each other for a while, but he's really kind of the musical director.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, if Bruce, even to this day, if he's kind of unsure about the set list or whatever, he's the guy to go to. He literally is the same character as he was on The Sopranos.
Yeah.
He's the number two guy.
That's right. It's Consigliere. So, and
yeah,
he does co-produce the album with John Lando, with Bruce, you know. And yeah, he didn't play it much, but then once they decided to bring it back, I mean, you know, like in 2016, they brought it back, and the High Hopes tour, they brought it back, and the Reunion tour, and it was 7% of the show. So they, you know, Ghost Tom Joad tour, they get about half the time. So it kind of comes in and out a little bit. But yeah, Steven loved it. And somehow it got to number 29 on the mainstream rock charts.
Not
Billboard. No, not Billboard, but on mainstream rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not know that John Kerry used it in his presidential campaign.
Okay.
But I guess he did.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out for him.
Yeah, I was going to say, that worked out for you, but okay.
Yeah. Apparently looking like Andrew Jackson doesn't help you become president in 2004. Oh, well. So the next song, Bobby Jean, this is an interesting one.
I forgot about this one altogether.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I probably did too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of about a breakup song, talking about, you know, you're not around anymore.
Yeah.
You know, but you hung with me when all the others turned up their nose, like the same music, like the same band, like the same clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this is a to and about Steve Van Zandt.
That's what it seems like. Like you could, like you said, it's a breakup song, but then I think if you listen to it, this is not about a love interest. This is about somebody who is a very close friend, and you're sad that this person is gone, but you're also a little pissed that they just kind of disappeared. Like you didn't say goodbye. You know, we had all this history together, and then you just leave, you just bounce. And I guess there was some bad blood about creative differences or something. I don't know, between the two of them. And Van Zandt decided he wanted to go out on his own.
Yeah. And so, and I, you know, he did around this time, although he's in the Glory Days video prominently, I would say.
Yeah.
He was not on this track. Because if you go through track by track, who was on every track, Steven didn't play on this track.
Okay.
And I guess it got some traction in like the dance clubs or something like that. Even the name Bobby Jean, because so Bobby's kind of a dude's name too, and then, you know, Jean, so to kind of give that ambiguous kind of, it could be about a breakup with a woman, but it also could be a breakup with a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting song, you know, and the lyrics, again, are good. He, whatever you think about him or his music, you got to give him some credit for the lyrics that he writes.
Absolutely.
Not everybody can do this, obviously.
Right. And again and again and again, too. But, you know, when we were doing research for Bad Company, they were talking about, you know, what happened to the band, blah, blah, blah. And the one guy, I can't remember who was, some music critic, was like, well, you know, everybody's really only got about 8 songs in them and, you know, 8 great songs, not Springsteen. I mean, he just has that knack of, I guess, seeing life and turning it into phrases that people really gravitate toward and really having some heavy duty messages in these things.
That's right. You know, it's an extraordinary talent that he has. And I have to give him credit. I mean, as much as we say, oh, you know, whatever, Mom's like him. And he knows how to write a song that everyone can relate to.
Well, I came by your house the other day.
And appeals to everyone. Even if you, I'm sure if you asked your mom back in the day about any of these things, you'd be like, what's he talking about? Well, I don't know. It's just a catchy song. I like
great
to
song.
Listen to it.
That's yeah. right. Yeah. So anyway, we move on to I'm Going Down, which we heard on the radio quite a bit.
Correct.
Was it a single?
Yes,
it was.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of 4 singles on the second side. It was the 6th single released August 27, 1985. So, you know, 15 months after the release of the first single, almost 16 months after it. I remember them playing this on the radio a lot because the chorus is catchy. I'm going down, yeah. down, down. Backed with 2 different songs, Janie Don't Lose Your Heart and Held Up With a Gun if you got the 12-inch single. This is as Johnny Cash as it gets on this album.
Yeah, I love this song so much. I love it so much because he's got that cool little mandolin at the beginning. Bum, 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 bum. And then he goes into like, I am going to put my hand through the back of your head because all we ever do is fight the entire time. Like, remember when everything was cool? It's not like that anymore. It's like you get off on making me miserable. And so it's not a song about like, oh, you know, our love went bad. It's like, I just can't stand you anymore.
Yeah.
You're just pissing me off every day, all day long.
We sit in the car outside your house, but quiet. I can feel the heater coming round. I go to put my arm around you, and you give me a look like I'm way out of bounds. Well, you let out one of your board sizes. Well, lately, when I look into your eyes, I'm going down, 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 down. I'm going down.
And am I going to go down to get some action someplace else? Maybe that's where I'm going down.
Yeah.
You know, right.
Or I'm going down in flames. Like, this is just not like, I don't know what the problem is. What does he say? I'm sick and tired of you setting me up just to knock me down. Like, that's all we're doing now. It used to be great. Not so great anymore. But again, the music is catchy as hell. And you're right. The chorus is the same way.
It's a great song. It's a rocking tune. Clarence has got a big, you know, solo part on, I guess you could call it. Went to number 9 on the Hot 100. But it went to number 9, you know, the 6th single. Like, at some point, is there Springsteen burnout? Apparently not.
No.
And I know MTV and touring helps keep an album alive, and they hit the road hard on Born in the USA, and so hard that their next album would be a box set of, you know, Springsteen live for a decade, 75 to 85. But it's kind of amazing the longevity of this album at that time, especially when there's so many other things going on, because R&B could be popular, hip hop was starting to get more popular, heavy metal was getting more popular, you know, classic rock, all these genres, plus there's this kind of rising underground or college scene with bands like the Smiths and the REMs of the world kind of gaining traction. So suddenly there's a lot of competition out there, and yet he's keeping them all down. And maybe that's part of the record companies just promoting this and nothing else, but doing awfully well.
Yeah, it is interesting that in this day and age, in 1984, 85, he could have maintained this when he's old. He's not hip. He's not new. He's not happening these days. But yet he had the strength of the material to keep him in front of everybody.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty. And that's the thing. Like, you've got the strong album, but it's not like this is your only album.
Right.
Like, you know, Duran Duran puts out three albums. Like, okay, well, you got to play stuff off those three. He's got seven albums to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, he can do covers in a way that no one else can, you know, of certain songs. So he's got more going on than the average pop star. That's for sure. Okay. So the next song, Glory Days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that anyone can relate to this song. And I know Absolutely. Some people from yeah. my childhood who I'm still friends with. I just look at them, I shake my head, and I go, glory days. Like, people who can still remember plays in the basketball game. Like, we took it up, and then I scored, and then we went back. I'm like, you can remember that shit? Oh, my God. You know, maybe that's because you were the star and I wasn't. But still, it's like, why do you still have room for that in your head? You know, it's because it was glory days. It was kind of when they're on the top of the mountain there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with reminiscing. I mean, that's what we're doing right now.
That's for sure. Forbid.
But it's the and I always thought this was weird too as a kid. Are you really going to live your life like that? Like everything sucks now, but man, remember that 20 years ago when we were on top? Like, really? That's no, dude. Like, the best days are ahead of you. If you think they're behind you, you're in a lot of trouble.
Well, unless you're the dude from Downbound Train, when you lose your job and you lose your wife, and you know, those were the glory days when you're straight out of school and you're in great shape and you're a former athlete and you got the hot girl and now you got nothing. I don't blame you for reminiscing about the glory days, because these days kind of suck, you know. So I get it, you know, and I just try to catch myself every time I start thinking about, man, it was so much fun, we did this or that, and like, it's great, it was fun. It's also 35 years ago. Time to kind of move along. You know, you've got good things going on now that you need to appreciate, kind of thing.
The other thing is, too, I guarantee you, if I put you back there right now, there's a lot of stuff that maybe you forgot about. You kind of only remember the good part. Hey, wait, oh, yeah, I remember this wasn't that much fun. So you go back to, so let's go back to the video. You know, I have no problem believing Bruce works heavy equipment job, and he's just sitting there all day thinking about, man, if only I were... You know, I could have been somebody. I could have been I could have gone pro, baseball player, if only my knee hadn't got screwed up, or I got that girl pregnant, and now I got to work this stupid job and my stupid kids.
Ugh. He's working the big crane, and he's got his hard hat on. I'm like, yep, I buy it. But then he's having lunch with the guys, and he's got his orange in his hand, but he's, you know, he's like putting his finger on it for a fastball or a slider or whatever. He's like, I wonder if I could still do it, you know.
Well, one more time. Just give me one more trip to the mound, and I could do this. And I don't know whether the video kind of shaped my thinking of this song, but it sounds like a bar song. It sounds like something that could be played at a bar. And probably has been a million times, but just whole vibe of, you know, these are the local dudes playing at the local tavern.
Yeah, well, and that's the video, right, of the band in the bar there. But it tells a story about, hey, I was walking in to get a drink. My buddy was walking out. And so we sit down you know, start talking about what else, you know, how shitty life is now. No, how great it was at one point, you know, how much fun it was, which is something I didn't know in doing research. Apparently had a verse in there about a guy who like worked in a factory, like a car factory, something like that, closing down. And he's sitting at the American Legion Hall kind of lamenting that he never had any glory days.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people had, but like I never even really got those glory days kind of thing. And he decided it didn't fit the song. So he cut that out.
Yeah.
It was apparently backed with Stand On It, which was in the movie Ruthless People.
Okay.
I guess it was on the soundtrack. So they decided to make that the B-side.
Mm-hmm.
Went to 5 Billboard, 3 Mainstream Rock, 17 in the UK, went platinum on its own as the single. But it was a pretty early single in the mix. I'm sorry. No, I was wrong. It was the 5th. Okay. It's between I Am On Fire and Going Down. So it's May 13th, 1985. Which is interesting because Steven has left the band. He's not touring with the E Street Band, but he's in the video.
Yeah.
Very prominently. You know, he's singing up next to, right next to Bruce. He's playing his mandolin solo, kind of quote unquote solo in the middle of there. And this is the first time that we see Patty Sciolfa.
Right. Correct.
Who looks like some, even back then, looks like someone's mom, by the way. Like, she's not like the hot chick. She's like the redheaded girl in the mom jeans who's singing along.
Yeah, correct. Always thought that was weird because he did. I can't even remember her name was the his wife at the time.
Julianne Phillips.
Julianne Phillips. There we go. But that's who he should have married the whole time. That was the deal. That was a whirlwind, you know, marriage. It didn't last very long at all. He probably got caught up in the whole, well, you know, I'm famous, so I need to have a hot.
And she's beautiful, yeah, head correct. To toe, you know, yeah. And she's in movies and stuff coming up. So, yeah, this is great. She's in this video. So, actually, both of his wives are in this video.
Dun, dun, dun.
Drink till I get my fill. And I hope when I get old, I don't sit around thinking about it. But I probably will. Yeah, just sitting back, trying to recapture a little of the Gloria. Well, the time slips away and leaves you with nothing, mister, but boring stories of glory.
So but that just still, makes it interesting.
He's still with her today.
That's true. I mean, it's not like, yeah, not like, okay, I'm going to cheat on her and then I'm getting her. I'm going to rock.
Right.
No. And they have a daughter together who went to the University of Kentucky because she's an equestrian, a world-class Olympic equestrian. And they,
oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember
they have a world-class equestrian program there.
That's where the disconnect kind of comes. And I remember that too. Like, oh, wait a minute. Right. Bruce Springsteen doesn't run heavy equipment. He owns horses on his farm in New Jersey, and his daughter is a world-class equestrian rider. That's right.
So, but see, at least in this video, she's just sitting back there singing. Eventually, they feel like, well, she can't just stand on stage. We got to hand her a guitar. Well, I, you know, I've seen him play, and I don't even know if they plug in her guitar, to be honest with you. Because they've already got Bruce's guitar, they got Steven's guitar, they got Nils's guitar.
Right.
Maybe even Gary Talent might pull out an acoustic guitar for some songs. So it's like, we really don't need a fourth or fifth acoustic guitar. It doesn't. But, you know, so, oh, I can do so much more. Yeah, sure you can. One of the times I saw her in Louisville, Patty wasn't on stage because she was in Lexington an hour away hanging out with her daughter. And I'm like, see, you're completely unnecessary.
I was going to say, did you miss her?
You know, you could have had your daughter come to the show, sit on the side of the stage, and she could have sat with her. You know, same thing. But it's Glory Days is a great title.
Yeah.
The video's done very well.
And great riff at the beginning of it. Just, you know, just this rocking tune. And so, yeah, it's, I don't know what the message is here. I mean, it is like, don't live in the past, I guess. But, you know, just remember the good days. And there is kind of some, I hadn't seen the video for a while, but there's a scene of him in bed and the little kid comes in and starts hitting him with a bat, you know, like playing around. And so it's like, is it really that bad now? Like, do you exactly. Are there things in your life that you can look at and say, I got it all right.
Exactly. You know, and I also wonder, is he juxtaposing himself? Like, does he, because sometimes those early days when you're struggling, when you're playing clubs, when you're getting cheated out of the $5 you were promised for the gig or whatever, you look back at the time like, this sucks. You know, I just drove 200 miles and we didn't get paid and da 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 da. But you look back on that fondly.
Right.
Whereas you're dealing, I got to deal with lawyers. I got to deal with taxes. I got to pay the whole band. I got to pay the whole, you know.
And now my friends who were, now they're mad at me because,
or I don't come around.
Falling out.
Yeah.
Or, the money gets involved. And yeah,
I didn't take them with me. Right. Yeah.
Right. Right. You know, but back then you had nothing. It was just, it was however many dudes were in the band against the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So does he miss that simpler time when it was just the guys in the van?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe he does. I don't know. You know, it seems like things worked out pretty well for him and everybody in the band.
Well, and that's cool too, that he still has most of the people from the original band. I mean, like, no offense to Max Weinberg, but like, anybody could play the drum part there. We're not talking super technical, but it's cool that he's still there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, and for the most part, you have to replace a drummer at some point. It's just physically too difficult to do. But, you know, hey, he's a loyal guy. They're loyal to him. They make a great living touring with, and he did well being with Conan for all those years, too. So
correct. Even like Clarence Clemons passed away, and I think the new, I don't think I know, the new guy in the band is his
nephew.
Nephew, correct. So it's a family deal. I'm sure that's what it feels like if it's backstage.
Yeah, no, I saw him with Clarence, and I saw him with his nephew, too. So he's still doing great.
Yeah.
All right, let's move along to the first single off the album.
Okay.
Dancing in the Dark, May 9th, 1984. So, you know, about a month before the album comes out. Interesting that it was backed with Pink Cadillac as the B-side.
Okay.
which he wrote, and Pink Cadillac actually went to 27 on the Billboard chart. So the B-side eventually got up higher than a lot of people's number one single. Obviously, Natalie Cole did great with it, and I think it went to number one.
But you're right, Natalie Cole did have a big...
big hit with it.
Big hit with that, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He wrote this. This is what we were talking about earlier. He wrote this after John Landau said he didn't hear an opening hit single. He's like, what? I've written 70 songs. Why don't you go write a song?
Exactly, yeah. But you know what? Fine. I'll write you a song in one night. There you go.
Yeah.
Shut up.
And then it makes more sense. Like, you can't start a fire without a spark. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can't write a hit tune without having something that I need desperately to write about, kind of thing, you know? So it's, I feel like it's right back in your face, John Landau. Like, take that kind of thing. And it was huge for him. Mm-hmm. Two on the Billboard chart. Couldn't get over. I think it was it Duran Duran? Now I got to look it up. Yeah, it was 4 weeks at number two. It was kept off by The Reflex by Duran Duran, which, of course, I loved Duran Duran at that point. I was so glad The Reflex came out and beat it. And then When Doves Cry by Prince took over after that.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of keep him at number two. It did go to number one on Cashbox, which I think is for sales.
Okay.
Of singles.
That makes sense.
So, yeah, and it the first of seven singles to hit the top 10. But, I mean, it also hit, what was it? See, so it's two Billboard, but it hit number one on mainstream rock. It hit number one on Airplay, which is a good thing, which means you're making money on it. Four in the UK, four times platinum platinum single. It's unbelievable. But of course, we remember it best for the video. Because for the video, Brian De Palma, that's right, the director of Scarface, directed the video for Dancing in the Dark over 2 days. The first day was the day before the launch of their tour, I think in like Minneapolis or something like that.
Okay.
So they did it before while the stage is all set up. And then the next day of the first night of the show. And of course, it featured a young Courtney Cox.
Correct.
But it also featured Bruce just dancing, without a guitar.
Yeah, that was the thing that, I mean, I've seen this video a million times, but going back to watch it again, don't stop doing that. Just stop it. You're meant to stand there and rock out with the guitar. Even if you're not really playing it, you've got it there just in case. I don't want to see you dancing. And was there a note here somewhere that perhaps maybe a young Alfonso Ribeiro took some of his Carlton dance?
It looks like the Carlton dance. I mean, it is so white. It's what the ancient Romans will have called albissimo. Translation, very white.
From the Caucasian mountains.
Oh my God. Just keep that guitar on, Bruce, whatever you do.
Right.
And then he goes, and you could see Courtney Cox with her pretty eyes before she'd had any plastic surgery.
But at this point
seems like a long time ago.
You didn't know who she was, though, in 85. I know she was on some soap, but I had no idea who she was.
She was on a show called The Misfits of Science.
Okay, that name sounds vaguely familiar, but even if that was the case, I would not have picked her out from that.
And it came out in the fall of 1985.
Okay.
And it was, because it had teenagers in it, it's kind of geared towards like kids our age.
It does sound familiar. All right.
Yeah, you know, it didn't last long. Like, it aired from October 5th, 1985 to February 21st, 1986. Like, it didn't get picked up, really. And it had some other kids you may have seen in other stuff at the time, but not any huge stars except for Courtney Cox. And I remember when Friends came out, it was like, and there's all these new young people who you don't know. I'm like, no, I know Courtney Cox. She was on Misfits of Science.
Okay.
And she was in the Dancing with the Dark video. And when she hosted Saturday Night Live, Adam Sandler did his Bruce impression like right in front of her during the monologue. I thought it was so funny. But Courtney Cox always annoyed me because she spells her name wrong. She spells it Courtney, not Courtney. Courtney. And she's obviously had a lot of work done.
Now, absolutely. I mean, even from that to Friends, yes, but now, ooh-ha.
Now there's so much work done. I mean, I understand you're a woman in your 50s. You're trying to stay on TV. Mm-hmm. You got to do what you got to do. But anyway.
I would have been interested to talk to somebody who was a big Springsteen fan before this, because it's got that, I mean, I didn't know anything other than this, but it's got that synth in there.
Yep.
I wonder if, you know, people, what the hell is this? This isn't Bruce Springsteen. They're selling out to the young crowd.
Probably so.
I mean, it doesn't, for all the synths that came out of the 80s, it still sounds fairly good. It doesn't sound all that dated, but
it's not overpowering the synth. Yeah. I mean, it's underlying.
Yeah.
But it's not the entire song.
Yeah.
And apparently Courtney said, oh, it could have been me or a bunch of different girls. It's just whatever, for whatever reason, it was me. Like I was saying, don't pick me, don't pick me. And then he did pick me. And then she gets up and does the white man dance right next to him. A lot of exposure for her. This won him his first Grammy. He never won a Grammy before until Dancing in the Dark. Also, Rolling Stone voted it single of the year. Not a surprise. I mean, Bruce Springsteen could come out farting on a snare drum and Rolling Stone be like, this is the greatest thing since Bob Dylan went electric. You know, Rolling Stone went from being so cool to so cheesy and so bad. You know, it's like there's periods of Rolling Stone that were great. And then now it's like, I don't even want to look at Rolling Stone. That's why I read Classic Rock Magazine.
There you go.
From the UK. It's awesome.
Hi, this is Jim McCarty of the Yardbirds, and you're listening to the Ugly American Werewolf in London.
Okay, now there's still one more song left, still one more top 10 single left on this album, My Hometown, which is a nice kind of sanguine, sweet way, although it's...
It's really not.
It's not. It sounds nice to end up the record. B-side with Santa Claus is coming to town.
I didn't know that, and so I'm glad that... Because I love that song, so it's a cool deal. But yeah, we're bringing it way down on this one.
Bringing it way down. Of course, Santa Claus would end up on the very special Christmas album.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, very slow song, My Hometown. Kind of a lament about how it was great. It was a great place to grow up. But now it's someplace you move out of.
I think this is another one of those songs where like you can kind of listen to it on the surface. Like, you know, My Hometown. Yeah, blah,
yeah, blah, I like blah, My blah. Hometown. Yeah.
Right. But then you start to listen to it and you're like, oh, yeah, that's what it is. It's this place, you know, my father or grandfather built is now just a place where I can't even live anymore. And, you know, I was supposed to inherit this and now it's a dump and I've got to move out and there's political unrest, civil unrest.
Yeah. Ew. It's crime. Yeah. It's the Rust Belt story basically.
Right.
Which kind of runs kind of all from New Jersey through Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, all that, tons of factories, tons of working class jobs, and they're all just gone. But despite all that, it was 6 Billboard, 6 mainstream rock, number 1 adult contemporary, and 9 in the UK. So another top 10 hit in the UK, went platinum in the US. So we're talking about 10 million singles sold off the record.
Off the last track on the record.
Yeah. And 30 million for the whole album. And the video is kind of late in the tour.
Okay. Yeah.
And kind of even maybe slowed down even more. But it's kind of just him on stage there, I think.
Wants to come down here no more. They're closing down the textile mill across the railroad tracks. Foreman says these jobs are going, boys, and they ain't coming back to your hometown.
There's so much going on. It's such an epic album. Did so well for him, obviously. I have to give it a lot of credit. I have to give him a lot of props on this album.
Absolutely.
Because there's so many great epic songs. I can't listen to this album because of the time it came out. The lead song is too much. And it's just not what I'm into personally.
I would agree with that. I can pick and choose a couple of these things. But yeah, this is not something that I would put on, look forward to putting on and listen to all the way through. I mean, if something came on the radio, I mean, not Born in the USA, if I never hear that song again, it won't hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
But you cannot deny the impact that this had and just the, what am I looking for here? Just the way it transcended, it crossed over to so many different people and so many different subsections of everybody knew this record. Everybody listened to it. Everybody had a copy of it. I mean, like you said, if you didn't have it personally, yeah, like your mom or your dad had it or something. Right. It was around somewhere.
But I haven't listened to it all the way through since like 1985 or so.
I'd say the same thing. Absolutely.
And I didn't even do it for this show, right? I skipped a couple of songs because it's like I've heard them. So I don't even know if I could say it's the one that's helped Bruce Springsteen endure all these years, because everything he does, Rolling Stone's all over him about it. He's got some very, very big fans out there who love whatever he does. And he did great work before this. Mm-hmm. Obviously, nothing sold this well, because almost nothing in the history of albums has sold this well. But, I mean, this is huge for him, and it's a big part of his legacy.
So I just want to look real quick what you were saying about the sales. So the next record, well, he did the live.
Yeah,
I think it was a box set. Correct. Yeah. And then the next studio album he would put out would be Tunnel of Love in 1987. Sold 3 million. So, I mean, to your point, yeah, I think Born in the USA had a huge impact on him still being a worldwide star today. I mean, he was always going to sell records, but to sell out all over the world in 2024, mm-hmm. it's because of this record.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No doubt about it. And then, you know, after that, he did Human Touch and Lucky Town when we were in college together, right? It wasn't a double album. It was two albums.
Two separate albums, yeah.
That came out together. And I think one went platinum and the other maybe went double. It's a little confusing. No. It was like platinum and platinum. And you know, did well around the world, of course. Probably had worldwide sales much higher. But A, music by 1992 had changed. The whole grunge thing was big. Springsteen was a little old mm-hmm. in 84, 85. Now yeah. he's in his 40s. And people are starting to turn, I don't know about this. But then The Rising, and that wasn't his next one after that, but The Rising after 9/11 kind of gave him a whole new breath of life. And the E Street Band got back together. And
yeah, I think Steven Van Zandt came back in the late 90s, I think, or maybe yep. early 2000s to back in the band.
So I guess it's probably fair to say he wouldn't still be as huge without this. It wasn't the only thing he did and everything prior to this, but this is the one that he'll probably be most remembered by. Maybe not by the critics, but certainly by the fans.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
Born in the USA, the biggest album in the history of Bruce Springsteen's career, came at a time in our lives when we're like 11, 12 years old, and you couldn't get away from it. And I think that's why we harbor, I wouldn't call it resentment, just like a little ambivalence about listening to it again after all these years, because they crammed it down our throats in 1984 and 85 and 86. And while the album is great, there's a lot of great tunes on there. Bruce Springsteen can really distill a lot in just a few lines of lyrics. It is amazing. And he can do it to really catchy tunes and beats. He writes really great pop songs. But when you listen closely, a lot of times the lyrics and the story that he's telling is not really something you necessarily want to smile and sing along to. But that is his brilliance, I think, as an artist. And while it may not be what we want to listen to day in, day out, we're more of the hard rock kind of guys, or we want to hear big solos, people can stretch out on him. You have to admire his ability, his talent as a songwriter, as an arranger, certainly as a lyricist. 30 million albums sold, plus 10 million more singles. They don't make albums like that anymore. And we want to know from you, Bruce Springsteen fans, did we get something right? Did we get something wrong? Did we miss the point? Did we leave out your favorite part? Email us, let us know. It's uglyamericanwerewolf@gmail.com. You can let us know the artists, the bands, the albums, the concerts, the books, the DVDs, the rock properties you want to hear us talk about here on the show. Just be sure you subscribe and download wherever you get your podcast. Doesn't matter where, those downloads are the lifeblood of the show. And if you're thinking about it, guys, hey, please go out and give us a positive review. It makes a huge difference to us in being able to grow the show and go out and find more rock and roll fans like you. You send it to us, we'll read it on the show. And thanks to Pantheon Podcast for making us part of the family. Thanks to our extraordinary sponsor, RareVinyl.com, where if you use the code UGLY at check out, you will save yourself a big fat 10% off your entire order. That's it for Born in the USA. Thanks so much for listening. Lots of fun stuff coming up on the show, so you gotta subscribe so you don't miss any of it. And to all you rock and rollers all around the world, be cool and keep doing what you do to keep rock alive.